Hi, I'm Chanel, one of the journalists at Manx Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of Manx Radio Newscast.
Hi, I'm Karen Bell, and I'm one of the founder members of the Manx Endometriosis Support Group.
I'm Sharon Lunt, and I'm one of the other founder members of the Manx Foundation Support Group. Sadly, Carrie couldn't be here today. She's the third member.
Now, let's start with March. March is Endometriosis Awareness Month. Can you tell me about that?
Well, basically, it's just an awareness month that Endometriosis UK and other endometriosis charities across the world sort of get together to promote what endometriosis is, because it's such a underdiagnosed condition. And the signs and symptoms aren't recognised by many medical professionals, and it can take many years to get a diagnosis. So this year, Endometriosis UK are using the line of "Ask, could it be endometriosis?" and they want to extend that out to the public as well, in the hope that people can access diagnosis quicker and access the care that they require.
Right, so Sharon, you know, Karen made a very important point there where she said this year the theme is ask, can it be endometriosis, you know. Is that something, should we even be asking that question?
It's a tough one because there are so many different symptoms for endometriosis, and it's also known as the silent disease that people can only find out when they're looking for infertility reasons. And they get to the point where they have a laparoscopy to have a look inside at what's happening with their organs. And that's when they can find out that you can have stage 4 endometriosis without actually ever having any symptoms. But it can do a lot of damage in that time because it's unchecked.
What are some of the symptoms?
Fatigue.
Painful periods.
Yeah. Painful sex.
Painful going to the toilet.
Yeah. Alternating between diarrhea and constipation, obviously heavy periods, pain on ovulation.
I have it on my kidneys, and potentially looking at my new symptoms, I have it on my lungs as well. So when I breathe in deeply, I get like a stabbing pain through my shoulder blades, and sometimes that strays down my left arm, sometimes it strays down my right arm. I've also, in the past, I've had it on my hip area, so I used to get sciatic type pain. So obviously, with those in mind, I went to a physiotherapist for my hip, thinking that it was sort of exercise accident type related. And then when I had my surgery last February, they actually found that I have endometriosis on my tailbone sticking to my tendons. So it was joining the two, and that's what's causing the actual hip pain. And there's not really much that a physiotherapist can actually do to rectify that. It needs to be removed surgically.
Karen, do you want to add there
about symptoms?
Yeah,
well, as Sharon was saying, you know, we've got the sort of main symptoms that you might think are specifically gynecologically based, but endometriosis is a whole body disease, as Sharon has illustrated there, diaphragmatic, affecting the musculoskeletal system, joints to tendons, in muscles within the body. I think those are sort of really the main symptoms that you'll be looking at, alongside bowel and bladder. We touched on obviously bowel, but you can get bladder urgency as well, and these are things that really need to be considered and looked into. Often with endometriosis, people get misdiagnosed with things like IBS, or maybe you know, bladder urgency for whatever reason. But what is that reason? A really common diagnosis for women with endometriosis is a water infection, so a UTI, when they haven't actually got one, but actually it's the endometriosis that's causing those symptoms. So you'll have your test to see if you've got an infection, and it'll come back negative, but you'll still be treated for it because it looks like you've got it. So when we're looking at endometriosis, we need to consider the person as a whole, like you would with any condition, really. And we need to move away from the fact that it is purely a gynecological based condition, and that treatment for this condition needs to be in a specialist unit, not specifically as part of a general obs and gynae department. You know, you can go there and you could maybe have initial screening, but actually I think worldwide it's a problem, and what really needs to happen is there needs to be specialist centres and there needs to be more of them. I think worldwide, when we look at skill level for endometriosis, if you're going to be having the correct surgery, excision surgery rather than ablation, I think there's probably 1% I've read in statistics that are actually of the gold standard level of being able to do total excision of endometriosis.
Now, you spoke about, you know, having a specialized clinic.
Yeah.
Is that something you'd like to see here on the island, or in terms of how the island handles endometriosis, you know, are we heading in the right direction?
Are we headed in the right direction?
No, not at the moment.
Not currently, I wouldn't say so. I think there are pockets of people that maybe are getting through quicker, and there are people who are waiting, and it's the people who are waiting or not getting a diagnosis that are the bigger number of people.
Some people can't get past their GPs to even get to the gynae stage to then be found that currently we don't actually have a gynecological surgeon.
So currently I think the surgeries, I haven't had surgery here, I went across, but currently from what we understand, there is a general surgeon who is doing the surgery, not a gynecologist.
When I had my surgery last February, it was with a general surgeon, and he comes highly accredited as
Absolutely.
A general surgeon, but he actually said to me himself that he's not confident in removing the endometriosis that I had that is blocking my left kidney at the moment. But had I been able to get access to an endometriosis centre because I'd already been pre-diagnosed and this is a further surgery from the one that I had 14 years ago, then if I'd have been able to be sent straight there, it would have all been done in the one surgery. Now, obviously, I just touched on that. I possibly think it's on my lungs. Another thing that does happen is I've read that surgeons they go in around your waistline and they look down.
Yeah.
They don't very often look up because they class it as a gynecological illness. And as Karen said, it's actually a whole body condition.
Are people well informed about
endometriosis?
Are people well informed, or could people be more well informed about endometriosis?
There's a lot of misconception out there. I mean, I've seen and heard some unbelievable comments. So things like you hear, it's just part of being a woman, painful periods. It's just one of those things. Sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not. Periods aren't painful. They're not supposed to be painful, not to the point where you can't get off the bathroom floor. Not to the point where it stops you in your tracks. Yeah, there may be a little cramp, little niggle, but not to the point where it's causing you any major issues. I've had people with endometriosis belittle me because I've not handled it in the same way that they have. If I urge anyone that's having their symptoms belittled to still go and get it checked out, don't pay attention to that. It is a dangerous attitude out there. On the video that we watched Below the Belt recently, one of the things that was said was that stigma is the easiest form of repression. And I think that's attached to a lot of women's health, because obviously people don't want to know about your periods. People don't want to know about this, and people are embarrassed to talk about it. But the fact is that the damage that it could be doing, while people are belittling you, people are saying, just take a paracetamol or get your hot water bottle or just go and walk it off, with something that I've heard recently. It is not something that you can walk off. I know of a case where the lady has got it on her lungs and she's had four collapsed lungs. Yeah. This is not a disease that you can just walk off. This is not the right attitude to have. And there are some very, very dangerous attitudes and opinions out there that are really making it harder for particularly young girls to get the diagnosis that they need. I mean, obviously, where we are now, when I'm not bothered, I've had three children, you know, like, if I need to say what I need to say in a doctor's surgery, I'm quite happy to say it. But obviously, some of these patients that are coming to us and some of the ones that we've witnessed as and we've seen on case studies, they're in late teens, early 20s. And, you know, they're only just getting over the embarrassment of being a teenager to then be sort of gaslit by somebody because, oh, it's just a painful period. I dealt with it. It's not the same for everybody.
Do you want to add on there?
Well, from what Sharon has said, I mean, obviously, I agree with all of that. And we see this regularly with girls, women contacting us on the support group. Sadly, all with similar stories of varying degrees. And it's the education that is required. And like Sharon said, with regards to people don't want to talk about periods, they don't want to talk about anything like that. But when we look at what we teach in schools and what we teach our young girls about sex education and periods, it's very, very limited. And actually, that conversation outside of endometriosis needs to open up as a whole, because within that, we need to be talking about these conditions and what is normal and what's not normal. So when a young girl is at school and they've got fatigue that's interfering with their day-to-day life, they're vomiting when they're on their period. You know, they're having a week off school every time they're on their cycle. Something needs to be done about that. Yes, they may go to the to their GP and they'll be prescribed hormonal treatments. Now, the treatments can help with the symptoms, but the hormonal treatments don't treat endometriosis. They will mask the symptoms whilst the endometriosis continues to grow. And what we want to do, and worldwide there is a movement to do this as well, we want to raise the awareness of the signs and the symptoms and the education, so that actually, if you are 14 and suddenly you have a sudden onset of fatigue and you don't know why, you can go to your GP and they might consider that. And we need to move forward with diagnosis away from formal diagnosis comes with a biopsy following laparoscopy. There are moves to use signs and symptoms to have like a working diagnosis. But what we really need to work towards is other ways of diagnosing without having to have surgery. So there are like saliva tests now that you can get done privately, which would say potentially this person has it. And I know there is research studies where they're looking at specific inflammatory markers for women who've got endometriosis versus women who haven't, which may help in a diagnosis. So we need to move that forward. But where that needs to be available is at the GP surgery. And that needs to be available the first time that woman or that girl presents with those symptoms. Early diagnosis will improve fertility outcomes. It will alleviate pain and it improves overall quality of life for that person and for the people around them. So that's really where we're coming from on this.
Now, if I can take us back, I know you said, well, you both said we need to get the conversation going.
Yeah.
I know, aside from trying to raise awareness, you guys, you both have also contacted your MHKs. You've written to the health minister. You've written to the CEO of Manx Care, as well as MCALS. Can you tell me about that? You know, are you trying to get that change that you want to see on the island?
We want local education, don't we?
Yeah.
We want local education of our healthcare staff on the front line. And it's not that we are saying that anybody is doing the wrong thing. They just haven't got access to the most up-to-date information and education to ensure that we can do that.
My last correspondence to them was regarding the Below the Belt documentary regarding endometriosis, and it's an American program, and it's backed by Hillary Clinton, Corinne Fox, Mae Whittam, and Rosario Dawson, and it's on the education of medical staff. One of the ladies who was on there who provided her videos is actually a nurse, and it wasn't until about 3 years into her symptoms that she actually heard the word endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
This lady is a qualified nurse.
Yeah.
That is scary. It's actually scary. And so she's on there with her symptoms, her operations, and her outcomes. She's obviously saying as well that it's scary that you can actually find more valuable information on a Facebook group than what she's actually getting from her OB-GYN, as they call them in America. And I wrote to them to actually suggest that we show it in Kildare, and we actually allow, I initiated the communication with possibly sort of GPs being one, first liners like at A&E, and obviously gynae need to be looking and watching this video. There's nothing educational in there, but it just explains that how little, I think there's one sentence in certain education topics in the entire nursing that
yeah.
you read on
about
endometriosis, and some of the actual documentation in there is from 100 years ago. So it's not just a Manx problem, it is a worldwide problem, but I don't see why the Isle of Man can't lead the way.
So that's the outcome you'd like to see
yeah.
from our representatives.
I think when we're looking at specialist service, we can be referred to usually ones in the Northwest, but it's accessing that. And historically and personal experience would be that they wouldn't want to refer you to the specialist unit before they'd done maybe a laparoscopy here, and if they didn't think that it was advanced enough, should I say. So, I mean, I can give you a personal example. I mean, I've definitely had symptoms from at least age 14. And my symptoms probably would have been vague. You know, fatigue that would stop you getting out of bed, but wouldn't be all the time. It would fluctuate. Heavy periods, period pain, but didn't really know why. My mum would take me to the GP. They would test you for your thyroid, diabetes, everything. She's fine. She's healthy. And you'd think, you know, and that went on at different sort of points throughout my 20s and my 30s. And it wasn't until after I had my son, who's now 8, that my symptoms became more apparent and I was seeking more support. And really at the initial point, it was like, well, you've had a baby, so you've got heavy periods. Really? You know? So take a hormonal contraceptive. And it went on, and then I was getting more symptoms, so I was like, really, I need to be reviewed. So I was reviewed and I had scans and everything, and it's like, oh, it's clear. Now, that's no sort of derogatory point against the people that were doing the scans, because when you have an ultrasound, I think this is really important for everybody out there to know, is unless you have a specialist who's reading that scan, and there's very few of them worldwide, they will not be able to tell if you have endometriosis. You have to go to a specialist who knows how to read that scan. So for 5 years, it was like I was going back and I was going back with the symptoms. I'm having the scans. I was being told it was fine, until what's called an endometrioma showed up on one of my scans on my right ovary. And then at that point, it was sort of, we weren't rushed to surgery. I didn't know anything about it really at that point. That was the first time I'd heard endometriosis. But sort of things went on and I did a bit of research, and it was at that point I thought, no, I need to actually get the information myself here to know what I require. And if we're looking at surgical treatment for this condition, you've got ablation or you've got total excision. Total excision is the gold standard of surgery. Ablation is the one that's used more commonly because there aren't as many surgeons trained in excision, total excision of endometriosis. And as Sharon said, when they go in to do the laparoscopy, they don't need to just look down, they need to look up. And if you go to a specialist, then that's what they do. They look everywhere and they have an MDT available for that surgery. So that could be a bowel surgeon, a urologist, you know, whatever is required, because some people require bowel resections. Yeah. So that's why really as well, they say when you're having a surgery, ideally what you want is for that person to have one surgery, one good excision. Okay. And they talk about recurrence. But if you look at the studies and from the research that's out there from the people who are highest up in this profession, they don't refer to it as recurrence. They refer to it as persistence. So you and persistence they usually see in somebody who's had ablation rather than excision. So ablation means that they don't get all the margins of the lesion and they don't get the root of it. With excision, they get the root and they extend their margins when they're removing it, and they extend out of the peritoneum to healthy tissue. So they do everything they can to be able to remove that. And when you're looking at those surgeons, they are doing 1,000 plus complex endometriosis surgeries in their career up to that point, and they've got to be doing like at least, I read some research saying 12 a week for them to be considered that, and they have to have done additional training. So they may be a general obs and gynae, but they've gone through all of these levels to get up to the top, and all they treat is people with endometriosis.
Right. Now earlier you spoke about the documentary, you guys mentioned the nurse and how she only discovered it through groups.
Yeah.
You both, I know there's three of you, but you have created this Facebook support group. Can you tell me about it?
Well, it sort of came about when I was recovering from surgery last February, and I just thought, we need to do something. And I set it up and I said to Sharon, what do you think? And she was like, yeah, that's a really good idea. And on the back of that, I can't remember how we got in contact with Carrie, but...
So Carrie is our third member and founder. She is actually, she'd already been in touch, so she's suffering quite bad herself. I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. But she's been in touch with Endometriosis UK to actually try and bring a leg of that charity to the island to like support us, because we don't have anything over here. There's no charity or any sort of support groups whatsoever. I also have celiac disease, but there are celiac charities and support groups over here that are already functioning. So we thought that this needed to be addressed. And obviously Carrie had already been working away on that. I think she was our first member, wasn't
she? Have been the first member, and yeah.
That joined the group, and then she spoke to us and explained what she'd been doing, and she's just been great because she went with you to meet some of the MHKs to talk about education. That was last year, wasn't it?
That was March last year. Yeah, we met with some of the civil servants who work in Department of Health just to say that we'd started the support group, and this is sort of where we wanted to move forward with it, with regards to what we've said about education for within healthcare, basically.
So we haven't really done any sort of group activities. We have mentioned it, we've brought it up, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of input all the time from other people. I think they tend to, when you look at articles we post, there tends to be a lot of seen by so many people. We have just been, Karen's just been in the newspaper for the walk that she's organising on the 16th of March at 2:30 at Timwold Hill. And that was, we put that in the paper to get some more like out there, because not everybody's on Facebook. Also, I know people who I have invited to the group, I've told about the group, who haven't actually joined, because not everybody wants to be public about it. Not everybody wants people to know. So there are people that aren't on the group that I know personally have the condition. So there are many people out there. We've now got 154 members, I think.
Yeah.
So that's quite a lot to think that there are. I know several people who aren't on the group who I know have it. And I know that there are obviously people out there that don't have Facebook. So we wanted to do the walk. Basically, what we wanted from people was to come to us and tell us, what did they want from us? Mm. From the three of us, what do they want us to take forward? What do they want to take to the MHKs? What do they want us to take to Teresa Cope and Laurie Hooper? What do they want us to bring forward? What would benefit them the most? Some days, when I've got fatigue, like Karen was talking about, I'd just love to be able to have a cleaner.
Yeah.
But it's just, what do they want from us? Obviously, we know, as the three of us, we know what we want and we know what we're battling with and what we're dealing with. But the disease affects everybody differently. So, as I say, mine currently, so I was battling with my private healthcare and they won't cover it because they class it as a chronic illness. So it's no longer covered with them. So, but they offered me, they said that they would pay for a full hysterectomy. Now, to put that into context, that would be absolutely pointless for me because I don't have a spot of endometriosis on any of my uterus, ovaries, anything. They are completely clear. I have got it on my kidneys and now possibly on my lungs and further down in my body. I don't have it on my reproductive organs, so a hysterectomy would be useless unless they excised the endometriosis, like Karen was mentioning before. So everybody has it differently. Everybody suffers differently with different symptoms. So I had it 14 years ago when I had my last surgery, and it was very reproductive organ based then, and I would spend 5 days every month on the bathroom floor completely. I was either comatosed on tramadol, or I didn't want to be comatose, so I tried to go through the pain with just paracetamol and ibuprofen, and I would be on the bathroom floor just in complete agony. 5 days guaranteed every month. So, but this time it's been a whole different battle. It's not affected me in the same way. So I have pain when I breathe in. If I breathe in too deeply, as I said before, it feels like somebody is stabbing me in between the shoulder blades. It does spread. I get cramp sometimes in my rib cage if I twist or if I turn. So it can affect everyone differently. So we need people to come forward to us and tell us what they want from us. Obviously, we are a small area, so possibly a specialist centre on the Isle of Man wouldn't actually be viable.
No.
It's not something that we actually propose, but what we would like to be able to offer is people to be able to come to us if they wanted, and for us to be able to refer them on to the right team and say they look like they need addressing from an endometriosis point of view. Can you refer them then to a specialist centre in the UK that we work with, so that we've got a liaison between, obviously we're not, I'm definitely not a medical professional, but so obviously I can't make any sort of diagnosis, but to be able to sort of be like a charity type base to then
advocacy service.
Yeah, advocacy service for people that then I got a contact that I can say, look, I've got this lady come to me. She's presented with these symptoms. I think she needs to be seen by you guys, and then to be able to forward them through our medical service that then can just, rather than saying, well, we need to have a laparoscopy here, let's get her across, let's get the MRI or the CT scan or whatever with the specialist that can actually read them. Because my MRI scan showed that I had no endometriosis whatsoever, and that was 3 months before I had my surgery, which I am now waiting for a second surgery because my left kidney is that covered with endometriosis that at some point I am going to lose kidney function. So it's not a disease to be ignored.
I think my last question would be, maybe Karen, if you can tell me about the walk.
Okay.
On the 16th.
Well, like Sharon said, it's on the 16th, and it really, I suppose it's an like Sharon said, it's so we can chat with people as well afterwards to find out what they would like. But it's initial sort of informal get together. So people maybe feel more confident to ask questions and to meet with us in the future. And obviously it's about awareness raising. So we've asked for people to come in yellow because that's obviously the colour for Endometriosis UK. And we're going to, like, because everybody is affected differently by this condition, some people might not be able to walk very far. So we're making it so that you can have a little stroll around the Arboretum. If you want to do more, you can do more. And then afterwards, we will all go to the Methodist Hall where there will be tea and coffee and people can meet and have an informal chat. And what we've said is bring 10 food items to illustrate the 1 in 10. Now, when we say 1 in 10,
That's diagnosed.
That's diagnosed. There's more than 1 in 10 people affected by this condition. So, you know, bring the 10 food items, whatever anybody can manage. It can be 10 packets of crisps. You know, it can be 10 biscuits. 10 biscuits. Whatever you can manage. One of the girls contacted me yesterday and said her mum was going to make some biscuits with the endometriosis ribbon logo on. And I said, oh, that's so lovely. Thank you. And then another lady's going to make some yellow cakes. So if anybody wants to make their food item yellow, please do. Because we're going to take pictures as well. And hopefully we can get that again in the newspaper and for more promotion. And it's just a starting point, really. And you don't have to have a diagnosis of endometriosis to come. If you think you might, just come along. We're quite friendly. And all we really want to do is to help other people to start asking the question, because the way to change is to educate ourselves and to advocate for ourselves. Now, I think for myself and Sharon and Carrie, we've got this group and I think we feel confident to advocate for ourselves. And that's not an easy thing to do. So we are there to help people to put emails together if they want, you know, support to think what they might say at an appointment to get what they might need. You know, we can do all of those things. Or if they just want to have a chat, we're there and we can help with that. But going forward from this first sort of walk, I think it is the hope that we can have more in-face meetings, because when we talk about endometriosis and support for endometriosis, the surgery and access to the specialists, that's step one. This is a long-term condition, and even with excision, it's not cured. It's a systemic inflammatory disease, okay, that affects the whole of the body. So, you know, you're going to have your surgery, but what do you need before that? What do you need after that? You need pelvic floor physiotherapy because of the impact this condition has with regards to musculoskeletal, but pelvic floor.
So with pelvic floor, it can actually do one of two things. So you can actually have where most women have as they sort of age and after having children, obviously you have the pelvic floor where that can lead to incontinence. But you can actually, endometriosis, because if you've got lesions in that area on muscles down there, they can actually be over tight and actually cause issues that way.
And if you go to, you know, you can go to these classes now where they treat you for pelvic floor and you can do the exercises. If you don't know whether your pelvic floor is too tight and you're doing those exercises, you're going to make your pain worse. So you need evaluation from a specialist within that. And they are key to the MDT treating women with endometriosis. And I think alongside that is nutrition. A lot of us adapt our diets to help with managing symptoms. I know personally it helps me. And there is a lot of research out there about that. And I think really important, which overrides all of this, is emotional well-being support. This condition is a physical condition, but it has a massive effect on your mental health. And that's what needs to be recognised as well. And I think as part of the group, we want to be able to provide that emotional support to women as well. But that has got to be part of services going forward. it needs to be an MDT approach where we look at the surgical removal, we look at the pelvic floor therapy, we look at nutrition, and we look at emotional well-being, and we look at education of women so that they can advocate for themselves, education of professionals so that women are making an informed decision about their care needs. Currently, the majority of women aren't making an informed decision about their care when it comes to endometriosis because they're not being given that and they don't know where to access that. So like one place I would say to people to go to, and we promote it often on the Facebook page, is the Nancy's Nook endometriosis education page. Nancy is a retired gynecology nurse who worked with a doctor called Dr. Redvine in America. And he is seminal in the research and where we're at with endometriosis surgery and treatment. Sadly, he passed away suddenly last year, but his legacy goes on. And this website that Nancy set up has women all over the world. And it has all of the up-to-date research and information and education about questions you need to ask about endometriosis to make sure you're getting what you need. And it is a page where you have to educate yourself. So I would urge anybody to join that page, look up the website, and to look on there at their list of doctors that they have throughout the world who are what we call NUC doctors, who are the specialists. There is a UK list. So that is a good starting place for anybody, in addition to obviously locally for anybody on our page. And we provide any support and post articles and information as we find it. So hopefully going forward, we will have more meetings, and we welcome anybody to come along to that, no matter of diagnosis, no matter if it's because you're somebody's mum and you just want more information, or you're their sister or you're their aunt.
Not even just endometriosis. No. I mean, endometriosis goes hand in hand with a lot of other women's diseases. I wrote a little nugget on the page the other day saying that it's not just about endometriosis, because obviously then you've got adenomyosis, which is another one. You've got polycystic ovaries.
Fibroids.
There's so many different ones out there. We don't want to isolate those people. Obviously, the awareness is fibroids and things like that are much easier to diagnose. Like with scans and stuff like that, they're easier to pick up. Endometriosis is like, it's quite invisible. It's the invisible condition. That's the problem. That's what we need to get forward, is obviously it doesn't always show up on scans. It doesn't always show up on there. The actual diagnosis of it is quite invasive. So obviously if you have any of those as well, you are more than welcome to come to, because the centre wouldn't just be around endometriosis, but obviously that is the one that's sort of being swept under the carpet or just being ignored. But obviously anybody's welcome.
I mean, you could have polycystic ovaries and fibroids and not know you've got endometriosis. Endometriosis goes along with so many other conditions. As Sharon was saying, she has a diagnosis of celiac. Autoimmune conditions go hand in hand with endometriosis. So, you know, like say, come along, contact us on the Facebook page. We're more than happy to talk to anybody and help in any way that we can. And we just want to move the education forwards. So, I mean, going on from the walk, yes, we want more meetings, but we would really, really like to be able to get this documentary below the belt screened on the island. We're in contact with the producers, and all it takes is the funding, and they've given it us at a discounted rate because we've negotiated that. But obviously, as a group of women, three women who don't have like funding behind us, we can't afford to pay for it.
Or somewhere to actually screen it.
So, you know, we would really, if anybody out there is listening who wants to help us with that, please get in contact.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.